Disrupting Class: How Disruptive Innovation Will Change the Way the World Learns. Authors: Clayne Christensen, Michael Horn, and Curtis Johnson. The Disruptive Innovation Theory. This theory explains why organizations struggle with certain kinds of innovation and how organizations can predictably succeed in innovation. We call innovations that drive companies up sustaining innovations. Some are dramatic breakthroughs, whereas others are routine. But the competitive purpose of these innovations is to sustain the performance improvement in the market. Disruptive innovations take root in simple, undemanding applications. And what is a new plane of competition? Where the very definition of what constitutes quality, and therefore what improves means, is different from what quality and improvement meant in the original plane. The disruptive products in the new plane are not attractive to the customers of products in the original plane. They don't want and can't use them, because companies need to meet the needs of their customers. The companies that made the products in the original plane of competition have a difficult time engaging simultaneously in the new, disruptive plane as well. Applying disruption theory to public schools. In the private sector, the metric on the vertical axis of the disruption diagram is a type of improvement that merits premium pricing. But in the public sector, where we can also draw these diagrams, the political or societal importance of programs determines the metric on the vertical axis. Public agencies constantly move up market, away from initiatives that are less politically important toward those that are more politically important. Some programs are intensely important in the communities schools serve, whereas others are less important. In a manner similar to disruption in the private sector, society has moved the goalposts on schools and imposed upon them new measures of performance. What is unique about public schools is that the laws and regulations make them a virtual monopoly, which makes it difficult and sometimes impossible for new business models to compete on the new measures. Society has asked schools to pursue the new metric of improvement from within the existing organization, which was designed to improve along the old performance metric. In essence, the public schools have been required to do the equivalent of rebuilding an airplane in mid-flight, something almost no private enterprise has been able to do. On average, however, schools have done just that. Adjust and then improve on each new measure. Cramming computers in schools. Students use computers primarily for word processing, to search the internet, and to play games. A small number of middle school teachers, under 20%, reported using computers for drill and practice software or for math games and the like. High school teachers report having made good use of computers to make better lesson plans and communicate more with parents through email and blogs. But in the end, both supporters and critics of school technology claim that powerful software and hardware often get used in limited ways to simply maintain rather than transform prevailing instructional practices. Disruptively deploying computers. The disruptive transition from teacher-delivered to software-delivered instruction is likely to proceed in two stages. Computer-based learning. In this stage, the software will be proprietary and relatively expensive to develop, and it will be monolithic, with respect to students' types of intelligence and learning styles. The instructional methods in the software will largely mirror the dominant type of intelligence or learning style in each subject. Student-centric technology. Software has been developed that can help students learn each subject in a manner that is consistent with their type of intelligence and learning style, whereas computer-based learning is disruptive relative to the monolithic mode of teacher-led instruction. Student-centric technology is disruptive relative to personal tutors. Following a disruptive pattern. All disruptions share a pattern. Disruptions first compete against non-consumption in a new plane of competition. In that plane, the technology improves, and the underlying cost declines. The technology begins drawing applications from the original plane of competition into the new one, in this case, from the traditional monolithic classroom to computer-based learning, and then to student-centric technology. But this transition is neither abrupt nor immediate. When a new approach or technology substitutes for an old one, because it has a technological or economic advantage over the old, the substitution pace almost always follows an S-curve. The initial substitution pace is slow, then it steepens dramatically. And finally, it asymptotically approaches 100% of the market. Public school systems. We believe change is possible, but knowing what must be done is only a start. Eliciting the requisite cooperation will be tricky. People have tried folklore, charisma, salesmanship, measurement systems, training, negotiation, and financial incentives. All have failed. We see only three possibilities. 1. Common language. Providing a common language is a mechanism of movement. In that, when done well, it can shift a group's location to the point that other tools of cooperation can be effective. With a common language and a common framing of the problem, tools like strategic planning, measurement systems, and salesmanship can be effective. 2. Power. Political and school leaders who seek fundamental school reform need to become much more comfortable amassing and wielding power, because the other tools of cooperation will yield begrudging results at best. 3. Separation. The last possibility is the separation tool. It is useful when the leaders do not possess the power to compel cooperation. If the levels of agreement are so low that none of the cooperation tools will work in implementing the required improvements, then separation is a critical option in the arsenal of reform. Should we quit trying? Attempts at education reform throughout the years have yielded only begrudging processes. Many have seen computers as the salvation for schools. The list goes on. And yet we return again and again to the question of why schools don't get the results for students, for which we all hope. Why would this time be any different? To understand why, let's review our major messages. 1. Few reforms have addressed the root cause of students' inability to learn, and most attempts have not been guided by any understanding of the root reasons for why the system functions as it does, or how to introduce innovation into it. 2. Disruption innovation does not take root through a direct attack on the existing system. This is how disruption drives affordability, accessibility, capability, and responsiveness. 3. Some of the places with the highest potential to circumvent the system and create a new modular education system that facilitates customization are the emerging online user networks. When the decision-making process for what is adapted in schools is centralized, as it currently is, there are so many powerful political and other forces at play that it makes change and customization nearly impossible. But user networks will democratize development and purchase decisions to the end user in the system, students, parents, and teachers. Smart people will do smart things if we just enable them to do so. 4. Finally, to the extent administrators and school leaders want to implement these changes, they have to use the tools of power and separation. This means that school committees and government officials need to view themselves as not being responsible for the specific schools that exist in their jurisdiction. Rather, they have the responsibility for educating the children in those areas. Systemic reform requires a systemic view that includes all schools.